You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
All right, everyone stand for the Canadian National...
What? I said no.
Everyone stand for the Canadian National Anthem.
Canada, our home and native land.
I know this whole thing. I'll go with you, Brian. Let's do it.
I believe you, Bart. All the people I know, now you join me. My mom was born in Calgary. I'm half Canadian. So proud of our Canadian Nationals Saturday night, providing the crew with two goals. Mo Farsin, of course.
Spectacular goals.
For Jason Russell Rowe, as the crew prevail over Chicago Fire 2-1 at lower.com on Saturday night. We have a ton to get to, including, I know it's shocking, things to complain about on the Mass Report podcast. We thank Saucy Brewworks for having us. Like and subscribe if you would. We miss Brett this week. He's in Syracuse.
He's like waiting to tell us.
Why?
Exactly. I think there's family up there, I think, is the...
They had like 40 inches of snow or something, according to him. Yeah. I saw his picture. He's just given up. He's on the couch, the blanket over him, and his dog lying on his head. We miss you, Brett. Wish you were here. It's actually not a bad day.
No.
Sunny and 54, I'll take it.
As far as we are aware, Brett also has some rants, so that'll be for next week's episode.
Right. He has some rants. Well, there's... Maybe it's good that he's taking the week off, because I have a feeling that the rest of you have a bunch of stuff to complain about as well. What else is new? Let's start with Chicago, and then we'll go back to the Houston game. This is crazy. I mean, the turnover here is so fast. We'll go back to the Houston game. Then we'll look forward to the Houston game tomorrow at lower.com. Note the start time, 6 o'clock. FS1 has it. And then... an interesting Red Bulls squad coming to town on Saturday night at 7:30. We'll get to that as well. But let's start with the Chicago match. Murph, for the first time this season, we saw that those ragged breakdowns in the back. And there was one post that was hit by the Fire. It was the first time where I'm like, this season, where we had to turn and chase the play. How worried should we be about that?
I don't want to come across, I try not to be reactionary, right? Like, one game does not define a season, one performance, all that stuff. So, like, was this the team's best performance? According to Wilfred Nancy, this was the best game of the year. That is what he said post-game. I disagree, but... he's the coach that won MLS Cup last year, not me. Look, I think Chicago's been okay this year. They've been the results don't speak, but 2-1 against Cincinnati, 2-2 with Philadelphia. They did beat Portland 2-1. So
they're competitive.
Yeah, this is an interesting team. With that said, I mean, you could argue that they got outplayed on their home field, and you know, you look at the numbers, the expected goals, things like that. You know, the crew had a long-range shot from Jason Russell Rowe. You have a cleanup there at the end. And, you know, it's not like Chicago's goal was a thing of beauty either. Obviously, the offside, we can talk about that in a minute. But the crew don't seem to be firing on all cylinders right yet. And, look, it's early in the season. You've obviously got some match congestion stuff and whatnot going on. But this isn't the team that we saw at the end of the year scoring at will. And, you know, playing their best soccer. And I still think they very much can get there. I'd be a bit more concerned if this weren't a team that had shown championship DNA last season. And, you know, went through some tough times last season. And if this is the tough times, I think everything's going to be all right. But, yeah, it just, you know, I mean, with the way that they were scoring goals and creating chances, I mean, when Sam and I were talking before the podcast started, I was struggling to think of a shot they had inside the box until Diego Rossi's in stoppage time before Mo Farsi apparently scores the latest game-winning goal in MLS history. But Sam said he thinks,
I did not know that.
Yes, this was the, according to Crew PR.
Sports Bureau, right?
Yeah, the latest goal.
That's something. Yeah, another record for your Columbus crew.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the point is they weren't creating those easy chances, and that's kind of been a thing all year. Like, they've had some good looks, but you know, it's not like they're getting balls inside the six or cutbacks to the penalty spot as much as they were before.
To be fair, I'll play devil's advocate here for a second, but in the first two games, they played against two really good goalies that stood on their head and kept them from scoring a lot of games. To me, I feel that this is kind of, I was expecting how they're actually looking better than I was expecting, and the only reason I say that is because I feel that because of how much rotation they have to prepare for, those first, like, five games could have been all losses, and I don't think Nancy would have cared just for the sake of getting to see what he has on hand and then how he starts rotating those players. I mean, they're playing four games in 9 days, is that right?
Yeah.
Is it even 9 days? Right. So yeah, you're gonna have to switch around a lot of people and not be able to play your full force any of those games in those tight windows that you're playing a lot of games, like a 4-9 or a 3-9 kind of thing.
I think any time you manage 60% possession, 18 shot attempts and 10 on target. You get 10 shots on target, you probably have. And I understand the XG wasn't there this game, but that's you're generally gonna win. There aren't too many games that you manage that amount of volume on target that you don't find a way to convert. And I think this is encouraging because we saw a guy in Jason Russell Rowe who, through those first two games, looked snake bit, just could not find the back of the net for the life of him. And he, scores a big, again, maybe not a big XG goal, but a big-time goal scorer's goal. You've now got, I think, four different goal scorers on this team so far this season, which isn't too bad to have. A guy like Diego Rossi still hasn't found the back of the net. You think he's going to be able to get up,
keeps getting closer.
Yeah, exactly. Aiden Morris, who, again, I don't think he's ever going to be a big-time goal scorer, but he's a guy who's, been able to show that he's been able to find the back of the net. I felt pretty good. It was a weird game.
Yeah,
it's just a weird game. But seven points out of three games, and you're up on aggregate after one leg in CONCACAF, you can't really ask for any more.
Yeah, and I think, too, part of it for me is there's no team in sports I dislike more than the Chicago Fire. So, watching them not be able to just dominate this team like they have in the past, it was the first time the Fire had scored a goal in Columbus in 5 years.
Yeah.
And things like that, that's where I can be probably more fan-oriented at this point. I also think you see the value when Steven Marrera and Mo Farsi are on the field. And this isn't news to anybody, but those guys are so important for what this team wants to do. And you saw it in the second half. Those guys get in there. They were much better in the second half. And look, if you can get by with Sean Zawadzki playing out of position, as he had to do at times last year, and you got Max Arfson out there, who I think gives you a good shift. He just isn't Mo Farsi, and that's nothing against him. If you can get by with that right now while these matches are going to be tight like we're talking about, then I think you're okay with it. But, yeah, it's not worrisome. They just haven't really started to ramp it up yet.
And I think that's encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you can look at it that way for sure.
One thing about Chicago, too, which I after Mo scored that goal and I'm like, is it going to materialize? I'm not going to say anything so I don't jinx it. But if you look at last week's match day, they also lost to Cincinnati on a set piece in injury time, in injury time. Yep. So it was great to just have it happen to them 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, Zawadzki, you mentioned him proving his value. I think during the telecast, Mr. Sam noted that he had played three different positions throughout that game. How many players are asked to do that? Not many.
Yeah.
Wilfred Nancy is having to. You can tell, you can see it. He has a plan about load management. The only person on the roster who is not subject to load management is Aiden Morris, who plays.
Hell of a play at the end of that game, by the way.
Yeah,
that tackle right in the box.
Huge double block, saves the game, saves all the points for the Crew, plays all the minutes. 112 or whatever it was the other night. Plays all 90 down in Houston. I expect he'll be out there tomorrow. The guy is a horse and so valuable to this team.
He's here, he's there, and he's definitely everywhere.
Yeah.
He had a nice shot towards goal, too.
Yep, he's just, I mean, we've spent so much time on this podcast gushing, and it's just enjoy it while it lasts. I think if you're, you know, if you are a scout for, you know, at any team, a team in Europe, you see plays like that, and with the context that you put there, Brian, playing in his 112th minute, in all that, and making those plays that he plays, there's those two blocks. I mean, that is just prime real estate. That is where you cannot make a single mistake. And to see, you know, a guy who can do that for you after giving you everything else he's given you all game, that's a guy I want on my roster. That's a guy who I think, well, you know, the goals may not transfer over here, but that sort of compete, that sort of situational awareness, that transfers anywhere.
Sure. And in Europe, if you have any sort of ambition of great success, you've got a lot of extra games loaded onto your schedule, as the crew do. And he's a guy that's already proven at what? How old is he now? 22?
I think 22, yeah.
Right. He's 22.
Can handle not only the pressure, but just the physical workload is something to behold.
One thing that really concerned me, and I don't know if you have stats up yet, but what was their passing percentage? Because it felt like at least everything in the final third that it was either a missed pass. It looked like it was mostly missed passes, either over hit or under hit, or just passed to the other team.
You might be talking about Chicago, because
Chicago was too.
A ton of missed opportunities on the counterattack by just bad balls into our final third.
Yeah, and crew passing was, you know, characteristic, 89%, you know, nearly 500 accurate passes.
So maybe it was just bad passes in critical spots versus overall bad passing.
And I think that's the thing. And when you have that volume of, you know, you have 200 more passes completed than Chicago, you know, you can have four or five bad passes in critical spots, and it's still not going to look that different on the, you know, from a percentage completion standpoint, but it could lead to dangerous counters, which we saw a couple times.
How weird was it to see Darlington Nagbe come off the field?
It was.
You understand why? But still, that was like, I don't think I've ever seen this.
But if you don't have a Sean Zawadzki in there, you don't make that move.
Right. To our point about his flexibility. But yeah, I mean, this is what we're going to see, at least until we win the Champions Cup. Is that what they're calling it?
Champions
now?
League. Champions League. It's always going to be
you're
Champions
asking,
League.
You're asking the wrong
whatever
person
it is, you know, as long as we're loading up on these extra matches, that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. We're going to see substitutions, patterns of which we're not used to. We can't talk about this game without talking about the lengthy offsides review on the Chicago goal that was called offside and then allowed. And there was some. Did they follow the rule book, Murr?
Well, so ultimately they got the call right, which I think is the most important part of VAR, right? But offside is not something the center referee should ever go to the monitor for. Mm-hmm. It's not a discretionary call. It's black or white. So the VAR should be able to look the person up in the booth or wherever they are, should be able to look and say, offside, not offside. It's there. I mean, in England, they draw lines. It becomes very technical. So, you know, you think about it from the run of play. The center referee is not the guy. I'm sure it's happened some point in soccer, but the center referee doesn't just call offside on his own. It's the linesman who makes that call. And, you know, this was a thing when VAR was first introduced, not just in this league, but all over the place. They had very specific things about when the center referee needs to go, and it's always been for...
It stops the game.
Right.
You know, and everything else, you want to get it right, but it stops the game, stops the flow of the game.
Yeah. Now, if there's not the review, and they just announce it quickly, maybe the crew don't have time to score that goal. So maybe this ends up being a good thing that you get to get that extra time added on. But it's just, I think it's the larger issue, and you know, we can talk about the referees in MLS in general, but I think this is true across the world with VAR, is there's too much reliance on VAR when this has always been a sport that's supposed to be free-flowing and the clock doesn't stop and all that. And you know, I get you can review things in football after a play or in basketball when stuff goes out of bounds. It's just, I've never liked it in soccer. And I think that when it's still not applied correctly years later, now again, they got the call right, but just tell the center ref, hey, he's on, let's get on with the game, goal, we're good.
All right, let me ask you this. So the referee, the pro referee organization, they are on strike. We have referees from all over.
Locked out.
I'm sorry. Locked out. Thank you. They are locked out. Let me get that correct, because this can be solved so easily.
Yep.
And we could have, granted, we complained about them a lot, but they're certainly better than the guys that we have now and the women we have now, who are just, God bless them, they're doing their best, but they're not qualified. So is the VAR official also a substitute, or are they working for pro? Are they working for the league? Because it seems to me that somebody upstairs needs to be following protocol and say, look, I looked at it. I don't need your help on this.
Right.
We're good. Let's go.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And look, this isn't the first time this has happened in this league, and probably in other leagues too, where they've done this. And MLS actually, I don't remember when, I was trying to look this up, I think it was a couple years ago, they put out something about this happened in a game, and it was, you know, it wasn't condemning anybody, just, hey, this doesn't need to be done. And it still gets done. I was trying to pull up who the officials were for the game, and I'm not finding it on here, but...
Well, and they have notably not been announcing the VAR and assistant VAR when they announce the officials, which is usually a couple hours before their games. I assume once they finish like scouring, you know, the rec leagues that have been playing that morning, or you know, high school games.
Well, VAR though is a specialized skill that you don't have when your kid's playing in a weekend tournament down in Dayton. You know,
I may be wrong for this, but I believe they've got someone at the league or from actually pro referee who is basically, it's almost like
a manager?
The Toronto dynamic in hockey. And I may be wrong on this, but I feel like it's one person that's kind of doing it for a lot of those teams versus, you know, a person of a VAR that is assigned to each game.
I think you're right.
You've historically.
All right. The VAR for this game was Mark Geiger.
The Mark Geiger. Right. Yeah. Pro referee. So he's kind of wearing that. It's like going for Toronto to see a replay overruled in hockey right now.
Yeah, well, therein lies the rub. We've seen too many visits to the TV, you know, and I love the little kids running down and they're like seemingly right next to the TV until the Columbus police chase them away. It's kind of a weird dynamic, but this is happening too often. It's stopping the game. The eye in the sky should be picking this stuff out. I really don't. Once you saw the review, and my fan heart was like, well, you know, wait, the goal scorer was offside. That's not the case, you know. And once I looked at it a few times, I go, okay, I get it. It should not have gone to the center ref even having to look at it. And that's the point we're making.
Well, and here's the other thing, too. You have the goal late in the game that Jason Russell Rowe taps in after, I think it was Rossi, who, again, probably offside, but they don't
look like it.
They don't go back and look at that one, which I thought was, you know, if you're going to look at the fire one, it's just as close. And, you know, again, watching it on TV, you know, after I get home, I'm like, okay, yeah, it was probably the right call. But at least, you know, indicate you're looking at VAR. Or maybe they did do VAR there and they just did it the right way that time.
Well, and I think the other, you know, it's worth quantifying this, and this was a stat, you know, released from PRSA going into this weekend, and going into the weekend there had been 22 reviews for game critical errors, i.e. going to VAR, through the first 29 games of the season. Through the first 2 weeks of the season last year with pro referees, there were, anyone want to guess?
Seven.
Zero.
Under. Over zero, two.
Two.
Two. 11 times the amount.
Wow.
And yes, so that's how you get 12 minutes of stoppage time. That's how you get a center referee 2 weeks ago in Minnesota overruling the linesman who called the Minnesota player offside on the sequence leading up to Minnesota's game-tying goal. Calls that your centeries referees don't traditionally make. And this is so frustrating from MLS's standpoint because you've seen them, you know, I would argue, seeding stories to the media about being, you know, satisfied with the level of refereeing that they've been getting. There's a story that SB Nation put out that said as much from MLS, and it was funny when you looked at it to see who had retweeted and who had shared these stories. It was just two people, and both of them were MLS communications employees, including Vice President Dan Kortzmarch. Maybe that's just tinfoil hat me there doing it. But then you've seen as much, you know, you've seen Don Garber, who's made misleading statements saying, you know, we don't know what a PRSA is asking for when they've been, you know, pretty clear on that. It's just what it would cost is ultimately less than $100,000, you know, per team for these referees to be able to be professionals, to get decent travel, to get
benefits.
Paid. Just decent benefits. Because, again, all of these guys are working additional jobs. All of them are working additional jobs. The level of fitness you need to have. And that is a factor that I think we can't overlook in this, especially when you've got things like offsides that are being questioned or overruled, because each one of these guys has taken, you know, they've got the MLS pro referee combine before all this stuff is, you know, these guys are working out.
You brought a really, really good point. How much did you say per team was it supposed to cost?
About $97,000 over the course of the season.
I thought it was more than that.
It went from 100 to the last
one. We can literally solve the problem by putting a donation box in the front of the stadium for one game.
No matter
throw
how
in
much,
$5.
Yeah, no matter how much you like referees, most people would probably donate for that. But I think you brought up a really good point, which is what I was thinking of as the game was going on, is that at that cost, you know, if MLS owners or, let's say, franchise operators don't feel like they want to put down that cost, they're going to regret it when these officials cost them a championship, cost them a playoff spot, cost them Champions League, cost them Campeones Cup, cost them this, cost them that, cost them a player to a really bad injury. It's really this is really the actual cost. It's not the 100,000. Let's say 200,000 per team. Let's be serious. 200,000 is something that is probably lost in the couch somewhere. They should be.
I would
paying,
like to lose that much in my couch.
Right. Yeah. So just saying that the position that MLS is taking in the way it is, especially since everybody knows how much money they're getting from Apple TV, how much additional money they're getting from other sponsors, et cetera, the owners are not willing to put up that little of an amount per team. When it costs you a championship, don't come crying, don't complain, don't be upset.
And I think the other thing is, don't be surprised, MLS, you know, Players Association, when they try these same tactics with players. I think it's a little bit more of a stretch to, you know, see, but I would not put anything past MLS and past Don Garber to potentially look at replacement players if he decides that, you know, the players are...
I'm old enough to remember when the NFL did that. Didn't last very long.
It was a
gut-busting joke, but that was the NFL, and that's...
That's where Don Garber came from.
I jotted down some thoughts about this, and I think that MLS has sort of become this skunk works for other sports to observe how much they can get away with. We saw a beat reporter for Cincinnati have her press credential revoked for 2 weeks nobody still knows how she, maybe you guys know, how she ran afoul of FC Cincinnati. But the point is that...
Would you like to hear?
Well, ooh, we'll get to that here in a second.
But publicly?
Here's my thought. Here's my thought. MLS, because they're MLS, they're not the NFL.
Yep.
They're not the NBA. They're able to control their message because there's not as much mass appeal interest in this sport. It's more niche. So they're doing, unfortunately, a pretty good job of managing the message.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can complain about the referees. I don't, even though I grew up playing, I don't consider myself anywhere near an expert on the rule book. I need to have occasionally things explained to me. I'm a fan, okay? So I'm not going to catch things that the mass of public who are, if you're an NFL fan, you're pretty experienced on watching games. And you can spot bullshit when you see it. I think with MLS, they're sort of counting on this sort of fog. You know, it's like, you know, they throw down the flash pot and the smoke goes, and then it's like, oh, what am I seeing here? I can't quite see. They're able to jumble the message enough, and there's not enough people that are truly pissed off about it. And they're just, you know, they're having a good time at the match or whatever. I'm a fan. I'm drinking beers with my buddies. They're not seeing what we're seeing as we drill down into these games, and we see the officiating is just not up to the skill of the players.
Well, and you've got, and you know, referees are everyone's, you know, favorite target too. So you're picking a soft target if you're MLS to kind of go after and try
absolutely,
to do this, you know,
absolutely.
Do this wedge. But I think that point you've made up, Brian, is really salient, because that's where I kind of go to this. The MLS is very, very meticulous when it comes to managing the message. We saw that a couple weeks ago, specifically when it comes to the referees, with the report in The Athletic that MLS had sent a memo to all broadcasters that they are to not quote, belabor the point when it comes to the lockout. In addressing, they aren't even supposed to refer to them as assistant referees. MLS told the broadcasters, I'm sorry, replacement referees, yes. MLS told the broadcasters that, you know, they know what fans want, and fans don't really want to hear about this right now. We know MLS knows what they want, and that is the issue, I think, larger issue, and why I think, you know, getting back to your point about these other teams keeping an eye on MLS, right? They're keeping an eye on MLS for this Apple TV deal. Yes, sure, to see, look, how is the league going to be able, you know, do by taking their product and putting it completely behind a paywall and totally cutting the cord. But really, what they want to know is, how is MLS going to do and be able to execute bringing production of the game totally in-house? Every person, the folks in studio, the folks behind the cameras, the folks on the microphones, even our dear friend Neil Sika, are employees, one-year contractors of Major League Soccer, not Apple TV. So when Major League Soccer sends the memo to say, hey, you don't talk about this. If Neil was still working for Bally Sports, he could look at that and say, and throw that away. If you're counting on, you know, getting your contract renewed from them next year, that's going to. And so what does that mean when there is a replay, looking for a replay of something? There's a controversial play when a replacement referee misses something. Well, maybe you're not going to see a whole bunch of replays of that. What's going to happen, you know, if there is a story about, oh, I don't know, a jersey sponsor for an MLS team, and that team unceremoniously dropping that sponsor because it turns out the CEO of that company is just a complete sex pervert. Well, maybe they're not going to really talk about that too much. Hey, Portland. And that's not Portland. Portland did the right thing.
I was going to say, at least oddly enough, Portland did the right thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And they need to do a lot more of the right thing. But stuff that suddenly in itself would be newsworthy, and that independent journalists like Laurel are covering, well, the league is trying to control that message as much. And that's so I look at what happened down to Cincinnati, DeLauro, and this is like, these things are not, you know, just happening in vacuums, right? This is all happening as a, it's part of this overall effort for MLS to completely control the message.
And that's a mistake, because you could look at this cynically. Sports, in a way, is a lot of it is what we talk about between games. Mm-hmm. I think the NFL knows this. And granted, there are things that happen, i.e. Ray Rice, mm-hmm. that they try to manage. But drama with players within certain mm-hmm. parameters, I think that they encourage that kind of discussion yeah. and controversy. Because that's grist for the mill. And I think mm-hmm. that's where MLS... in all their cynicism, they're missing the plot here that you need to let go a certain amount of control mm-hmm. so that the story will become, in this social media era, what exactly. it can become. Mm-hmm. It's not enough to just talk about Messi. It's not enough.
Well, you could just chastise reporters for all you when that's all you do, Don Garber.
Right.
Go ahead, Sam.
There's something to be said about how MLS is different from any league in the U.S., let alone any league around the world. But all sports leagues alike need to understand this. You are no longer in the age that you can hide stuff like you used to. And the less transparent you try to be, the more it's going to be embarrassing for you when it comes out, and it will come out. It's not a matter of it whether it comes out or not. It will come out. It's only a matter of time. Mm-hmm. And when it does come out, it is going to be embarrassing. And maybe you have no shame, which is fine. But you know what? There's a generation of people that's coming up that actually do care, and they'll hit you right in the nuts where it hurts.
The era where all the athletes were heroes is long dead. And it died decades ago when the late, great Jim Boughton wrote the seminal book. Have you ever read Ball 4?
Mm-hmm.
Read Ball 4.
Yep.
Former Cincinnati Jim Boughton?
No.
Oh, different one.
No. Jim Boughton was a pitcher with an incredible arm, pitched for the Yankees as a youngster, mm-hmm. blew out his arm, taught himself a knuckleball, and extended his career. His book is after his glory days with the Yankees, but he talked a lot in that book about heroes that he observed mm-hmm. as a young man with the Yankees, including Mickey Mantle. And of course, we know subsequently that Mickey Mantle had a lot of really bad personal problems and was not a great guy. America worshipped Mickey Mantle. Mm-hmm. He blew the lid off of that when that book came out in, I think, 1970.
The 70, yeah.
It's still, believe me, I'm not just
that's sports journalism school. They made you read that.
That is a seminal book, and he was basically blackballed from baseball. Mm-hmm. He made one brief comeback with the Braves, very like 1980, 1979, but he was essentially blackballed from baseball for writing this book and exposing, you know, players. I won't say what they called it, but mm-hmm. you know, players on the roof of their hotel with binoculars looking in the windows of women's hotel rooms because they were bored and drunk on the road. These are things that Americans had never heard mm-hmm. about their heroes, and there were no bigger heroes generated in sports than the New York Yankees. Mm-hmm. So those days are over, okay? And I think that they still try to pretend like they're not. I don't know how this turns out with the referees, but this is not sustainable. And they don't seem to be particularly interested in solving it. And that's the problem. That, you know, obviously we're not going to solve it here, but we all have our problems with Don Garber and MLS. Mm-hmm. There's a lack of leadership here over pennies, really. It's ridiculous. And it sort of makes you wonder, as you mentioned with the players, how far they would go to make a point, whatever that point may be. Mm-hmm. Because it's obvious they're trying to make a point, but they're shoving the fans' face in this.
Yeah.
And we're forgotten because it diminishes the product. When I have to sit and watch a guy look at a TV set for 5 minutes, and then there's 12 minutes. Thank mm-hmm. God for the 12 minutes of added time. But I'm saying in the bigger picture, that's not improving your product. That's not bringing in new fans to your product.
Since they're on Apple TV, you couldn't change the channel, or else, you know, if you were on regular cable, you're gone.
I thought about watching The Sopranos yeah. for a few minutes or something. You know, that was not a good look.
I'm curious, because I hadn't seen anything that, you know, just bring it back to Laurel Fulmer. Like,
and who is she for the uninitiated? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she's covered FC Cincinnati for a variety of outlets, I think, over the years. She has her own. She does Queen City Press now. She also does some Bengals stuff, so you
going
may recognize
to,
her there.
Going back to the USL days, perhaps?
Yes, yeah, probably. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, she wrote the definitive story on the aftermath of Matt Miazga's, you know, yep. Charging the referees room. Okay. And so that's,
seasoned,
you know, that we quoted on this podcast.
A seasoned B reporter, yeah. Not some person out of J school or first job. She covers the Bengals, I know.
Yeah, she also helps cover the Bengals.
She's not a clown.
No.
You know?
And I won't go into – I messaged with her yesterday, and I won't go – Sam's right. I won't say what she told me. But basically, she was doing her job, and Cincinnati didn't like that. And the mm-hmm. to your point of controlling the narrative, there seems to be a need to do that in Cincinnati. And this is – as much – as disappointing as this is, you know, Pat Brennan, who is the Cincinnati Inquirer beat writer I've known since our days at Ohio State together, I have heard from him in the past, nothing this extreme, but similar things of them getting frustrated with him for reporting things that need to be reported. But yeah, as a team, you probably don't want every little thing out there, but as a beat reporter, you find out these mm-hmm. things. Now, you know, some things you don't report, right? I mean, you don't have to put every little thing out there, but there are things that people pay, people, you know, however it works, to read your coverage, and it's not just when things are great, right? It's the good and the bad that you have to report on, and it sounds like they did not like some of the things, and I don't know specifically what, I didn't pry that much, but just some of the things she'd reported on.
Well, the ever-shrinking press box,
yep.
You know, I mean, that sends a message, doesn't it?
Absolutely, well, yeah. Independent media, you know, whether it's media consolidation where you're seeing those, whether it's, you know, she was at The Athletic covering Cincinnati, FC Cincinnati, when The Athletic, you know, said, hey, we're going to have a beat writer for every team in MLS, and that lasted a season. And then suddenly, well, they're just going to national writers. You've got, you know, it's the same news. I am surprised that, you know, they don't just have a Ohio soccer reporter for Gannett that's covering both Crew and FC Cincinnati for the Inquirer and for the Dispatch. I think, you know, I don't want to talk about that too much in case we've got any Gannett editors that listen to this. But it's just the way that you've seen, you know, media consolidation on top of the other steps that are taken. Again, none of this is happening in a vacuum, and it's MLS taking in a very exceptional, you know, position in their opportunity, you know, trying to seize this opportunity and this unique moment within the sports media landscape to really, I think, try to exercise even more influence.
You cracked me up when talking about Pat Brennan, because you reminded me of an old friend of ours who is no longer in the business, one Mr. Sean Mitchell. And
what's he up to? Is he still driving around the country?
I think he is.
How much he used to be loved by the Hunts, and particularly by Bobby, because he was so, he was really good at his job. He was from the Dispatch, so, you know, we're talking A-list media, but also a guy who's done it for a long time.
Glory days of the Dispatch, too.
Glory days of the Dispatch, nothing, exactly.
No disrespect to anyone working there now, but...
But, yes, so, you know, what has happened down there is unfortunate, but this is the difference now, is that the sports show that talks about down in Cincinnati, they're not talking about FCC mm-hmm. until they reinstate her. The fans, all the big name MLS writers and mm-hmm. commentators are all in solidarity. So basically, you know, FCC takes a page out of MLS and they're just embarrassing themselves publicly.
You're making yourselves the story. Congratulations. Right. You didn't want her covering your team. You just made yourselves the story.
And you embarrassed yourself. And mm-hmm. you didn't just embarrass yourself. Here's the thing. You're not just embarrassing yourself locally. You're not embarrassing yourself mm-hmm. in the state. You're embarrassing yourself worldwide.
Right.
Because
it's Barbara Streisand effect.
Yeah, it's made it to awful announcing. It's going to make mm-hmm. it to 442. It's going to make it to all these other
bigger
reach.
We are talking about
reach.
It on a Columbus Crew podcast. And like,
we never
terms for FCC beat writer.
Well, yeah. And Brian, you brought up, you know, I don't know how many people are aware of this, and we don't have to go into a ton of detail, but the Crew cut their press box in half this year. And I popped up there before this past game, and I wanted to just wish Neil good luck. And Sam had told me about it. I hadn't seen it, but it's pretty crammed in there. And Sam and I were talking before we started recording. The league was not happy to find out about this. You know, this is the city hosting the All-Star game. This is a team that, you know, people pick to potentially host MLS Cups here these next few years if they continue to be as good as they are. Well, now all of a sudden you don't have the space to host. You know, they've turned half of what used to be the press box into a suite, essentially.
Yes, into a private suite.
Yeah,
like not a private suite. It's actually a rentable suite, a purchasable suite.
Yeah, and I mean Sam.
All right, Massive Report. We're moving on to Patreon so we can rent the suite.
Yes. Yeah, there we go. But they've also screwed with how the photographers and where they can go and things like that. And look, this doesn't affect fans at the game necessarily. In fact, you know, I guess you have a new suite to go to if you want, and there's new seating down by the field. But, you know, if they can keep, you know, downsizing the press box, mm-hmm. and look, the press box doesn't need to be as big as it is unless you want to host U.S. national team games or mm-hmm. all-star games mm-hmm. or, you know, big
MLS
playoff games.
Cup again.
Yeah, exactly. I will be very interested to see it. I've covered two U.S. national team games at lower.com field, and it was filled. I don't know what they do now when you want to have every writer who covers the team across the country coming in.
Auxiliary press box.
But where do you even put it?
That's the joke.
You had, in the old stadium, you had more just open blank space that you could, which we saw in MLS Cup in 15 with the tents going up and so forth. Yeah,
they did that for national team games all the time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. To your point, I don't know what you do. But that's their problem. But they're making more problems for themselves.
Hold on. That is not just their problem.
This no, it's everybody's problem.
It's going to become
their problem.
It's their problem, but it's also the problem for the people who are trying to cover the team.
Absolutely.
In one way or another. And in the great scheme of things, most of us are trying to make the best of the situation and trying to work with the powers that be on how we can make this work out better than what it is right now. So it's a work in progress now. How much flexibility, we're not told, but we can only do what we can.
Ultimately, they just need Diego Rossi to start scoring goals. I think that's really what we come back to.
So we got to get to all this stuff, and we probably spent too much time ranting, but that's what we do from time to time.
Media cruise is the best part.
This will be called the ranting podcast, the ranting episode.
Need like the journalism professors to just like clip that middle part of it. It's great stuff for the students.
Crew go down to Houston, win 1-0, and sort of a winning ugly kind of let's just make it happen with a weird Alex Maton goal at the death.
That tiny little man rocking.
Who apparently hurt his thigh doing it.
I guess.
Because I was wondering why we didn't see him the other night.
He was out.
He was out in the injury report.
Okay. Well, I guess it was worth it. I'm more interested in, as far as looking at the Houston game tomorrow night, which kicks off at 6, weird time, FS1. Leg 2, we have that all-important tiebreaker, the road goal, which is like a jewel.
Still exists in this part of the world.
Jewel in your hand. It's so important. So essentially, if we draw 1-1 with Houston tomorrow night, we win the series. We move on. Who are we going to see? Who are we not going to see?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I would not be surprised. I think if you look at the lineup from Saturday and the guys that didn't start that normally would, I think you can expect assuming everybody comes out of Saturday's game healthy and whatnot, I think you can expect a Steven Marrera from the start. expect a Mo Farsi from the start. I think it would be interesting. I mean, at some point, do you give Cucho a break here? And, you know, you've got Jason Russell Rowe coming off what could have been two goals, but certainly the one goal. You know, do you see what it looks like in a game where maybe you don't have to score from the start because you've got that away goal? Do you see what it looks like taking Cucho out of the lineup and rotating a little
Subbing
bit up there?
Some Christian Ramirez,
right,
too.
You've got that. We saw Darlington Nagbe come out early, so I assume, like we talked about, I assume he will be back in the lineup because he's Darlington Nagbe, and I imagine Aiden Morris, you know. Could you rotate him out? Yes. Will they? I don't know.
I think Mo probably gets the start, but I still think they're trying to manage his minutes coming back from that injury. So, you know, you look at maybe getting a half or 60 minutes from him, but then I think you probably want to pull him.
Yeah.
What do we think so far of the young man from Colombia?
Oh, Marino. Oh, we've seen the glimpses. We've seen the glimpses, right? We saw, obviously, that 40, 50-yarder that he could have laid off, and we could have had just that open goal against Steve Clark, and just Steve Clark doing some vintage Steve Clark stuff. And he decided to go for the glory and did not achieve that. I think, you know, I'm a bit surprised that sort of that we've only seen as much of him as that we've considering he was, you know, really the at least most prominent off-season signing and got the entirety of training camp. And we know that, you know, Matan, at least in the preseason as well, had picked up, you know, a little nick. We've seen the glimpses. Touch it looks a little bit heavy. I think it's too early to make a judgment call. Definitely too early. And, you know, the hope is that we can see a little bit more of him in Houston. But nothing has really made me think, you know, okay, this is a guy that should replace Alex Matan in the front three. Or you know, should be the first option coming off in lieu of, you know, Christian Ramirez or Jason Russell Rowe when you're looking to, you know, bring someone on up there.
I think you're not seeing as much of him because I think I really think Nancy is trying to see how and what he can get out of Max Arson. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like really the biggest thing. At least Max has been around the team for a whole year, so you're trying to see how much you can get and what you can get out of him. But I think that you're going to see Henton Rosa a lot more moving forward. Now, there was some glimpses in the Chicago game. Like, there were some runs that he made. I just think his communication with whoever's playing on that side, mm-hmm. which is Zawadzki.
He was on the left side, wasn't he?
He was on the left side against Houston. He was playing more on the right against Chicago.
Yeah, you're right.
I think when you get your regular, you know, left center back or right center back in Moreira, how that communication between them and how they play off of each other might be a little bit different than having Zawadzki in there. But basically what I saw is this is not bad, but obviously he's very, very new, even with a full season.
He's
an adjustment to MLS.
Yeah.
He's only 21. Even if he had an entire time with the team.
Yeah. Well, and he also is a different type of player than they've had in terms of, you know, you've seen him go at guys and things like that. They haven't had a guy that really does that a ton. So, like, that's an adjustment for other guys, too, when they're, okay, normally this is, you're laying the ball off or you're recycling it or you're playing a quicker pass, whereas he's, you know, I don't want to say he's selfish because I don't think, but he's looking to go on his own a little bit more than maybe some of the other guys have. And I think they need to have some of that at points. And I think there will be times when that is an advantage, but you need that chemistry to build and them to understand, okay, he may not do this the way Matan does or, you know, the way Cucho would in those positions or whatnot.
Okay, we're going to play the way we're going to play. I don't think we're going to adjust for anyone. How does Houston attack us knowing that they have that tiebreaker that's out of their grasp now, at least for now? Unless they go crazy.
This is where I think, like, this game plays very well into Crew, because this is a Crew team that is able to hit you on the counter, and we've seen them do that this season especially, and take advantage of the space that's given to them, in addition to being able to do a good job with possession. And I think a pretty desperate Houston team, Crew's got the chance, I think, to add a couple in this one. And we've only seen, you know, this is a team that I think Neil said, scored two or more goals like 14, 15 times last season, mm-hmm. and you know, has only done that in one game so far this year. I think we've got a chance to see a 2-3 goal, you know, outburst from this team against a Houston team that anything, you know, unless they're able to get that first goal, you know, quickly, everything is just going to escalate it. And if Crew are able to get that one, well, suddenly they've got to be even more desperate. And this is, I think, just something that plays right into Wilfried Nancy's, you know, game plan and the way he wants this team to be able to counterattack.
And they've had some injury issues, as we saw when we were down in Houston last week. They couldn't put their full team out there. So no matter how many times Ben Olsen rants and raves at the official and waves his arm around after the game, I think he's going to be unhappy.
Well, and I think, too, it'll be interesting to see how Nancy manages this in terms of the, you know, like you said, we know how they're going to play, but we haven't seen this team in quite some time play in a two-legged series. Okay, you went and got the result you needed in the first one. Are you more aggressive, and do you go for the, hey, let's see if we can get up 2-3-0 on aggregate here early on, to Bart's point about scoring the first goal? Or are they a bit more, let's possess it, kind of like that second half against Atlanta? You know, we'll still get our chances. We know that they'll create chances, but let's just take the sting out of the game. And we just don't know. We haven't seen Wilfried Nancy's team over a two-leg situation.
I think he can have freedom with his roster tomorrow if they get the early lead. Mm-hmm. Then he can roll some guys off the
and
field.
And Steve Clark owes us.
I think that's the thing. You bring up a really good point, is that Houston's going to start this game fairly trying to score early and then figure it out from there, because then once they score early, they kind of even things out. But I think that really opens the game and plays in Nancy's hand because he kind of likes that. He wants to do that. They'll keep baiting them to come over to their side and then just strike.
All right, we'll make our picks here in a few minutes on that one, but we also have a match at home with an interesting Red Bulls squad who has brought over Emil Forsberg from Leipzig. Why is that important? Well, not only is he a Swedish national of some renown, he's also in their Red Bulls system. This is plug and play. I watched the highlights of their game with Dallas the other night. They won it 2-1. They're still fully trying to get him involved, but it's clear that he is a difference maker for Red Bulls.
Yeah, he's good. He's good, and he can change a game. Statistically, he hasn't quite got it going. I think goal and an assist thus far. But just watching him, you can tell that
last
this is
game.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that's true.
He assist.
And the way they're playing is a little different. I was texting with Brett about this because I wanted to make sure I was not reading the situation wrong. But they still press, but they're better with the ball than they have been under some other managers and in the past, where it's just, you know, they don't want the ball. They want to press. They want you to have it so they can turn you over. Well, they're still going to do some of that. It's still part of the Red Bull DNA. But they also will keep the ball a little bit more, look to build a little bit more. So it's a nice blend of kind of the philosophy that they've had for quite a long time, since they've really been a Red Bull team, and the kind of possession style soccer that has, you know, been popularized. And they will not make things easy on the Crew, even coming on the road.
And it's clear that Forsberg is also a difference maker in dead ball situations. Looked very dangerous against Dallas, and the biggest beneficiary thus far has been young Lewis Morgan, who has two goals in two games for Red Bulls. So they definitely look different. They looked like they had a spark to them in the package that I watched against Dallas. And granted, it's just a highlight package. I didn't have a chance to watch the whole game. But definitely a club with two wins and a draw, just like us. on the rise.
There are five teams in the East sitting on 7 points at the top of the... Now, Miami's played one more game, but everyone else, 2-0-1, and New York and Columbus right there. And same goal differential. They both scored four and allowed two. The Red Bulls don't have to worry about a midweek game, so you know they'll be at home getting ready for this one. I think that this will be the biggest test of the young season, I think, for sure.
Also, just of those, you know, teams with 7 points, shout out Laurent Courtois and CF Montreal. Yes. All of those on the road, too.
Yep.
That is impressive.
Beat
three
Miami.
Three cappies in the team of the week. Laurent Courtois, your manager, coach of the week, and then Mo was the starter and JRR on the bench.
Yeah.
I also will just get my mandatory. I hate John Tolkien. He looks like a bad guy in whose dad wants to develop the local rec center in your 80s teen movie. John Tolkien, I cannot stand that. Can't stand that player.
You brought up the brought up Crew 2. They play their first game this Sunday. I don't know anything about what Crew 2 is going to be like this year.
There's been a lot.
This Sunday
they have not announced a coach.
At the historic Crew Stadium, or are they on the road?
They are at Crew Stadium, yes. Okay. They play Red Bulls also.
Oh, okay.
So. That's kind of usually how that works.
All right. Yeah, so we know basically nothing about them, as it should be.
Yeah, this is...
In a perfect world, we're shuttling players through there. Either they're productive with the first team, or they go on to other things that fit their goals. But it's about player development.
Yep.
So it's a blank page, and we'll find out what they're all about.
Yeah, the roster has not been updated on the website here. I think normally we just say, you know, we understand what Courtois is going to do, but without a coach and with quite a bit of roster turnover from last year, they could look really different. Now
they've signed a lot of guys in the last couple of weeks, too.
Now, they are still going to try and play under the Crew umbrella, which has obviously fit very well between Nancy and Courtois. But, yeah, I think, you know, I don't know anything about Red Bulls either, so who knows how that's going to go. But I've said it before on this podcast, if you get the chance to go out and watch that team, I think it's fun to see those guys come up, and then you see Jason Russell, Mo Farsi, to your point, Bart, now having success with the first team, and you can be like, I remember back when. Plus, it's cheap, and
yeah, it's gonna be a nice day, kind of like today.
Not that cheap. Didn't they adopt dynamic pricing for tickets?
Oh, I don't know.
I believe they have as well.
Do they have dynamic pricing on brats?
The only thing they changed is that you can't buy season parking pass because they shuffled more between Historic Crew Stadium and lower.com than they were expecting. But as far as I'm aware, I didn't hear anything about ticket price changes.
I saw folks complaining about it on Twitter, and as we know, that means 100% verifiable, and that's the case.
Well, and it's St. Patrick's Day, so you might as well be drinking anyway.
Oh, yeah, good point. St. Patty's with your crew, too?
Yeah.
There we go. All right, let's make our picks.
Likely cheaper beer than at lower.com.
The beer is usually cheaper.
Let's make our picks and get out of here so that Sam can go play volleyball. How's your volleyball team doing?
Yeah, we don't.
Do you keep score?
We do keep score.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you prefer you don't keep score?
It's fine. I play for fun, so it's
exercise.
How do you think you guys would do against the Fury?
Oh, we'd get our asses kicked.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
Okay, if you give me like early season Fury, we might have a chance. Fury, not so much.
It's like, would you get a point,
I see a ball smashing your glasses right now.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Sitting next to you. All right, let's make our picks and get out of here.
On the forehead.
Houston, tomorrow night, 6 o'clock kickoff again. Weird start time, FS1. It is leg two with Houston for the Champions Cup. How do we see it, Murph?
I think this is probably going to be kind of a sleepy start. I imagine the stadium won't be filled. You probably, just given the time, people leaving work and whatnot, I could see
traffic.
It filling in a little bit more
so
later on. Yeah, I don't know why they're doing.
How? I just don't understand.
They did this with New England last week. They played at 6 p.m. at home as well, and there was no one at, now granted, going all the way up
no
to Foxborough.
But it's just like nobody.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. I know you want to put games on TV, one right after another, and it is nice, but So I'm going to go 1-1. I think Houston scores first, and then the Crew are able to get one in the second half to take care of business and see it out.
All right. Sam?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same thing. Depending on what that squad rotation is, if it's more rotated than not, you might see a faster start just because the guys that haven't been playing regularly want to prove that they, you know, earn the time. I'm going to say 2-1 Crew. We're doing Houston first, right?
Correct.
Yeah, 2-1 Crew.
I'll take the Crew 1-0.
Brett's got 2-0 Houston, 2-0 against Houston.
Okay. I got 1-0 Crew. Bart?
I think you're going to have a desperate Houston team, and I think Crew is going to capitalize. I'm going 3-1.
3-1. Any goal calls?
We're going to go with... Inestrosa is going to hit one from 60 yards out this time. Steve Clark's going to do it again.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And Inestrosa this time,
we didn't talk
he's
going to
hit it.
Oh,
I alluded to it. I did. It was too traumatic.
Yeah, that was a Steve right there.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
And that rat tail. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
We just need to acknowledge
what was that?
Steve Clark's rat tail.
Sam, can you get a good picture of that tomorrow night?
I will try my best.
All right,
please.
Because that's
yes.
ridiculous. Yeah, we can't have that, Steve. Come on now. There needs to be an intervention here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm way more concerned about the Red Bulls game on Saturday night than I am this one, actually. Murph, how do you see it?
Well, before the game, they're honoring friend of the podcast, Josh Williams.
Yes, they are.
So hopefully that gets things fired up.
Ups the lads,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah, exactly. I think this will be, like I said earlier, the toughest test. I'm going to say the Crew get a 2-1 win, but I don't feel fantastic about it. I think when we're here next week talking about the game, we'll have kind of a better idea of what this team is going against. You've seen them against a good Atlanta team, what we think will be a good Atlanta team. Now you get another, you know, kind of barometer here.
Sam?
Yeah. Playing against Red Bulls is always weird because of how they usually press and how the Crew tends to not play well under that and how they tend to, you know, if you look at the early game from last year, it was pretty not great. So I'm going to go with a 1-1 tie.
I see it 2-2.
Brett said 2-2 also.
2-2 also. Okay, sorry, Brett. Bart?
2-0. I think Crew's, you know, again, this is a team that has conceded all of two goals so far this season. I think Forsberg's, you know, strong, but I think really they've been, you know, pretty stout defensively, and I think the goals we're in for some regression. I think Diego Rossi's going to get rested here on Wednesday.
Yeah,
I think he comes in fresh and finally finds the back of the net.
Yeah, he's a guy that we didn't really talk about much as far as load management. He's probably due for a rotation there. That's what's fascinating about this. It's just like try to guess the lineup.
Yeah.
It's fun, you know?
It's more fun than when you just know the lineup every week.
Yeah.
Like, hey, they play.
I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
You play Saturday. Well, they're going to roll out the guys that are able to play.
This is a good problem to have.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Like, oh, how do you find space for Christian Ramirez, yeah. You know?
We're going to see a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm.
See a lot of guys this year. All right. And with that, we wrap the Mass Support Podcast. We thank Saucy Brewer Works for having us. Like and subscribe. Brett, we'll see you next week. If you can
dig out of the snow.
Out of how much snow did they have?
What do you save?
Like a lot.
Yeah.
A foot?
Something like 8 inches in the morning or something like that.
Oh, God. This time of year, that is a huge bummer. All right,
50-mile-an-hour winds, too.
Ugh. We hope to see you next week. I don't know why you're up in Syracuse. Other than, of course, family obligations. I get that. But, man, that sucks.
We also just have to quick acknowledge... They massacred our boy Crew Cat. We need.
Oh yeah, what happened there?
I don't know.
You probably
don't
even
understand.
See this.
I haven't seen it.
This is what Crew Cat looks like, folks. If you're watching at home, if you want to describe
like a sport coat.
Well,
or
they
something?
Put him. They put him to kind of dress him up like Don
like
Garber, but they reduced his like cheek fur, and then they gave him these two like just buck teeth, kind of separated buck teeth. Like, they gave him the Sonic. It was like the opposite Sonic treatment, where Sonic in the first cut of it had human teeth. And then they showed it and it's like, oh, that is creepy as hell. So they completely redid the Sonic the Hedgehog live action movie, right. The CGI. They did the opposite of that. They're like, what? You know what the problem with Crew Cat is, where people can't really relate to him? Why if he had just two big old, like, weird molars? Not even like cat canine, like fangs. It's so, they just made him look like this bucktooth yokel. It's like Cletus. I don't understand.
Cletus. Why did that's they do this?
So wait, real quick, I know we were wrapping up. He ran through the wall and did the Magic Igniter thing. But wasn't there another Crew Cat down on the field pregame? Like the original Crew Cat down
SC
the field?
SC was down on
I
the field.
I think that was SC.
Okay,
yeah.
Maybe I got that wrong. Because I thought they just had like two separate
Crew Cats, right?
No, we just need one. We just need one, the original Crew Cat. SC can disappear. And whatever this like bizarro Crew Cat is, this Uncanny Valley Crew Cat, needs to just be disappeared.
Oh, you're killing me. That's the first time I've seen that. Yeah, I was watching the game on TV. I did not see that. Yeah, that's not good. That's not a good look.
Oh, MLS,
that'll get our
MLS
press
sent out a
credential
memo to production to tell them not to show the Magic Igniter.
All right, let's get out of here. Saucy Brewers, thank you. Like and subscribe to the Massport Podcast if you would. Bart, Burf, Sam, I'm Brian. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.